Today's episode of The Thriller Zone is sponsored by Blackstone Publishing and the brilliant new techno thriller 4 Minutes by the number one internationally best-selling author duo, Brian Andrews and Jeff Wilson. 4 Minutes is available now from your favorite bookseller.
Hello, I'm David Temple and welcome to The Thriller Zone. On today's show, I'm happy to welcome William Boyle, author of Shoot the Moonlight Out, a book I thoroughly enjoyed. Now, in the spirit of transparency, I'll admit Bill and I ran into a bit of technical issues during this chat, but because of our mutually tight schedules, both of which had little breathing room because of his upcoming book launch, I wasn't able to reschedule in time, so I decided to just barrel ahead. Both of us did. And now, that said, despite the glitches, we had a great time. I hope you'll enjoy. Oh, and the best news? Bill has promised to visit us again very soon. And with better Wi-Fi. Okay, all that aside, let's you and I get in the Thriller Zone. We have a little delay in your signal. Are you how is your bandwidth?
Oh, I don't know. It's okay. I mean, I kind of live in rural Mississippi, so I don't usually have any issues that I know of. But I don't know any technical specs or anything.
By the way, you look totally different than that photograph. I just found that black and white on maybe your website. And then I see with the ball cap in your beard, I'm like, wow, he looks totally different.
Yeah, I can have a few different disguises.
Yeah. Does that come in handy?
Yeah. No, it's just, it's whether I shave or not, really.
It depends on if I'm running from the law, David.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Well, first of all, William Boyle, thank you for being on the podcast. It is a delight to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Shoot the Moonlight Out very soon, very shortly. I've got many, many, many things to say, but first I want to kick off the show with, I'm always curious where people have chosen to live. And for a guy who writes so eloquently about Brooklyn and having grown up in Brooklyn, and now you live in Oxford, which I had to actually do a Google search and learn that Oxford is a tiny little town just southeast of Memphis, Tennessee. What took you from Brooklyn to Oxford?
I'll try to tell short, not convoluted version. I went to college in upstate New York, in the Hudson Valley. So I spent some time outside the city then. And, I don't know, I just started in college. I really started discovering a lot of music and books that made me want to go other places, I guess. It's a simple version. Sometime around age 19 or 20, I started listening to Mississippi hill country blues, like R.L. Burnside and Junior Kimbrough and T. Model Ford and guys like that. Yeah. So that was kind of one of the first reasons that Oxford was on the map for me. Of course, I already knew at that point William Faulkner's stuff. But then once I read, by the time I was about 22 or 23, I discovered the writer Larry Brown. And he became just my favorite writer. And he was from Oxford and wrote about the area. So that was another reason I wanted to get down here. And so eventually I got down here and I just haven't left. I've stuck around. I'm back in New York a lot. My family's in New York. My wife's family's in New York. So we go back there all the time. But we've been here over a decade now, and I've just kind of kept thinking we're leaving, and we keep staying. And there's a lot we love here. It's a great, Oxford's a great, great literary town. One of the best independent bookstores in the country is here. And then there's also just Square Books. And there's also just, ton of great writers and ton of great cultural stuff.
Yeah, a lot of atmosphere.
Yeah.
And looking at the map, I mean, if you were to crow and you flew directly east, you'd end up just about where I spent a
big part of my life growing up, which was North Carolina, Charlotte and Winston-Salem. Oh, no. Yeah.
I like North Carolina.
Yeah, there's something about the South that, and one day I think about going back, there's something about the South and the history and the atmosphere that I really do miss. Comparing it to California, rather, is nobody's from here, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Where in California are you?
San Diego, just outside of San Diego. So you come for the weather and you leave because of the traffic.
Yeah, yeah. I've always kind of, you know, I've been out to California a few times only. My sister-in-law lives in San Francisco. I was in LA actually for the first time just right before the pandemic started. And I've kind of always daydreamed about being out there, but never happened or hasn't happened yet.
Well, at the speed you're going with the proficiency and that you're writing, I could see how it would be very easy to have a second home here. I'm at the stage looking for the first home, so to speak. And it's like I mentioned on a recent show, if you're trying to save a down payment and your down payment's about $250,000 just to get into a nice little fixer upper, then you know that you're in high cotton, as they say.
Yeah, no, and I never owned anything until the last couple of years in Mississippi. And one of the other great advantages about Mississippi is cost of living. Like, I don't think I could afford, I mean, I certainly couldn't have afforded a house in New York. And I, you know, can't afford one in California, but Mississippi, I can.
Yeah.
Barely, but I can.
Well, Shoot the Moonlight Out may help remedy that situation, William.
I don't know. I hope so.
So I'm reading that Wikipedia calls you an American author of character-driven literary crime fiction, which is probably the longest label I have seen for any writer on this show. And your own Pegasus Books calls you a modern master of neo-noir. So... two things. First of all, congratulations on really friggin' hip, cool titles.
Thanks.
And number two, can you help me understand neo-noir?
Oh, man. No, not really. I can't. I mean, you know, noir it's just such a tricky thing to talk about. People get into all sorts of debates about what is and isn't noir. I think when people use the phrase neo-noir, I almost never use that phrase to describe my own stuff. But when people use that phrase, I think it's just really in reference to the fact that anything that's not kind of from the classic period of noir is neo-noir. So stuff really from the 60s and 70s on gets referred to as neo-noir. But yeah, I don't, you know, I try not to mess around too much or get too caught up in thinking about those kind of labels or genre things. I mean, I love being thought of as a crime writer. Obviously I am, but I think a lot of that stuff just comes down to, like with music, it's like calling something alt country or something, you know, I mean, it's like, right. What does that mean? You know, I mean, great country music is great country music. It's not alt if it's comes out in the 90s or 2000. I mean, whatever. You know, I don't know. So no, I can't help you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, good attempt. I spent many years in radio, so I'm very familiar with that splintering of musical genres. There was, I grew up spinning classic rock, and then it became alternative rock, and then it was album rock, and it was soft rock, and it was soft hits, and then it was country and new country and old country and alt country and hip country and hot country, and country's country, you know what I'm saying? But, or yeah, maybe it isn't.
Yeah, I do think that the books are character driven crime fiction, so that's accurate. And you know, I obviously I'm happy to be referred to as neo-noir. That's a good I don't fully understand that term, like I said, but I think I fit into that world, certainly.
Yeah. Well, some of your books include, I don't want to flash these up on the screen, Gravesend, which was nominated for all kinds of awards, The Lonely Witness, A Friend is a Gift You Give Yourself, which sounds like a self-help book, but it's actually much other than that, A City of Margins, and of course, Shoot the Moonlight Out. How much of your childhood was inside of Shoot the Moonlight Out? And the reason I say that is because you're talking about character driven, which is so, this is such a classically, it's all about the characters. And then the way you captured the ambiance and the atmosphere of Brooklyn in that period is just, which was the mid to late 90s, is just spot on. So more specifically.
There's a good amount, I think, of kind of my definitely the world I knew growing up in there. One of the reasons the last couple of books I've been going back to the 90s, and this book is set, begins in 96, and then the bulk of it's early 2001 or June 2001. So it was part of why I wanted to write about that time was because it was the time that I lived most intimately there. So there's a lot of me kind of thinking about and returning to the things and places from that time that haunted me and that haunt me still. There's always some part of me, I think, in anything I write, but there's some of me in a lot of these characters, I think. Not one specifically in any way, but I think all of them, especially the younger characters in this book, there's a real something I really connect with.
I want to make sure I leave nice long beats in between questions and answers because we got a little bit of technical issue, but I wanted to say a couple things. First of all, that gritty realism is counterbalanced with such a big heart. Like one of your main characters is, you'd almost say a cold-blooded killer. He does it more out of, just taking the trash out. And yet he has such a sensitive side. So there's such a contradictory yet engaging and warm attraction to so many of these characters. It's such a dichotomy and combination of love, hate, like you absorb the pain and then you go, yeah, but that makes sense. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. And thank you. Thanks for those good words. This book kind of, it didn't start with the character of Jack. It started with the character of Bobby, but once I started writing Jack, I think that's a lot of what I was drawn to about him, that kind of dichotomy or that dissonance between the stuff he was doing or the stuff he kind of stumbled into doing and who he really was and how he walked through the world. I thought, I was really influenced and was thinking a lot about the film Ghost Dog, the Jim Jarmusch movie, which I love. And I just wanted to write a character like that. I'd never really tried to, not in that exact way. And he's somebody who's really, shaped by his grief and is just kind of a melancholy, decent person who also happens to do some rough things.
Dissonance is a good word, and yes, he's a guy with heart, but he does do some rough things. But the whole story felt oddly like, for fear of sounding like a cliche, kind of like a pair of favorite worn jeans. It was the balance between the familiarity of Brooklyn. I mean, having lived in New York a couple of times, I get a sense of that, and then just this great comfortableness with the neighborhoods and the way you describe the sounds of the city and the smells of the cities. It's just, it's comforting, I guess is a good word.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm always thinking about kind of the sound and tone of a novel, and in musical terms, I want the book to feel like an album in that way. And so that connection makes perfect sense to me, because that's how I feel about so many of my favorite albums and books and movies. You know, that's, you just kind of can fall into the world in a way that is familiar and yeah, comforting.
It took me just a beat to get used to the fact that each chapter was told from a different person's perspective. But once I did, I really fell into that rhythm, to go back to your musical term. And I enjoyed the getting to know each one. And then I don't want to spoil it anyway, but as the stories merge, there's such a great overlap. And here's what I enjoyed. As a reader, you would see some of it coming and some of it you wouldn't see coming. And then there are those moments of anticipation where you're playing these scenarios in your head as you're reading from one perspective, going, I wonder if so-and-so is going to meet so-and-so. And that was just so much fun.
Thanks. Yeah, it's something I just always, as a fan, I've always loved, you know, stories like that. And I've kind of fallen into telling my stories that way and more expansively over the last couple of books. I've kind of just keep having more and more points of view. And I just like this idea of all these characters, you know, in crisis, kind of crashing together. And there's points where they intersect and points where you think they're going to intersect and they don't, and points where their histories intersect, or, you know, their backstories intersect. And it's just kind of, you know, it's a lot of what living, I think, in a city can be like. You know, I mean, there's a you could live on the same block as someone and never see them. And then, you know, realize that you are connected to them in some way that you didn't even know. I love that. I love chance and coincidence. And so I really have fallen into that structure.
It's funny you should mention the word, the characters crashing into each other, because it reminded me of one of my favorite movies, which is Crash by Paul Haggis. And I loved how those characters were constantly intersecting and crashing into one another.
I've seen that film, but I'm more of a David Cronenberg crush guy, I guess. But I like that. You know, I definitely think that's a, structurally, that's something that I think about filmmakers like Robert Altman and Alan Rudolph, I guess, as kind of influences on that part of how I structure these stories. But yeah, I think that there's an element there for sure, and movies like, you know, not that these weren't specific influences on me, but I know that like 21 Grams films are often kind of rooted in that same kind of structure, and some of them I really do like and have had some impact on.
Yeah. Having lived in New York a couple of times, I lived on the West Side at one time, and one of my very favorite things at the end of the day was just to open a window and sit and just listen to the sounds of the city while I was, you know, having a drink or finishing dinner or whatever. And I think that's when so much of my passion for writing kicked in, because you literally could just listen to the sounds of the city and create worlds just by those sounds. And I had that kind of a flat, and that was, let's see, I was there in the early, mid 90s. So I had that flashback while I was reading this book. It was a great revisit.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that really shaped me, I think, just, you know, walking around, observing, listening. Where I live now, it's quiet, and I can't sleep without noise. You know, so I often just kind of, I miss that, you know, I miss the sirens and the buses and the just kind of street noise, the train. And that's definitely like when I'm sitting down to write, kind of one of the first places I go to is sensory details, and you know, sound is such a big one that brings me back to that place.
You know, funny side story, when I lived in Manhattan, because I was doing a morning show, I had to get up at 3:30. So I would get this sound machine to drown out the sounds of the city just so I could sleep. But soon after, I moved to Pennsylvania to take another gig, and I lived out way in the suburbs. So it was super quiet. And I actually had to create a different kind of sound to bring the noise back. To your point, you get acclimated to it, and when it's so quiet, you're like, I need some kind of an irritant to my sound wave.
Oh yeah, silence freaks me out way more than noise.
I'm curious about something, William. Two of my favorite writers, I had flashes of, and I hope this is a compliment because I really love these authors, and some of your work reminded me of it. Two of my favorites are Don Winslow and Elmore Leonard. And I felt nuance for some reason, characterizations and dialogue. Is that a compliment to you?
Oh, that's a huge compliment. Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, yeah, Elmore Leonard is one of my biggest heroes, you know, going back to when I was a kid. I discovered his books pretty early on. I started reading him probably by the time I was 12 or 13. And so really, I think a lot of my love of dialogue and just a lot of my love of these sorts of stories in general come back to Elmore Leonard and Don Winslow. Yeah, I love his books. You know, I've not read everything of his, but everything I've read, I've really enjoyed. I was a little late to Don Winslow. I'd heard great things about him for a while, and I probably didn't really start reading him until like Savages or around then. And then, you know, I really liked The Force and the Cartel trilogy, of course. You know, so he's definitely a writer I love. I mean, I also interviewed him once, and I just was like, I don't know, I'm such a coward when it comes to time. You know, my novels generally are set over a few days. I have a lot of characters, but my novels are set over a few days or maybe even a couple of days. And this one is actually, Shoot the Moonlight Out is over, the bulk of the book takes place over a few weeks, which is a long time for me. And I was talking to Don Winslow, and I was just like, man, I don't know how you do it. I just don't know how you do it, how you keep track of all this. And it takes place over a much broader time period. It's just, yeah. So that's a huge compliment. Thank you so much.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned The Force, because the character in The Force reminded me of Jack so much. I don't know why, because The Force was so much rougher and tougher and darker. But that's what pricked my memory bank. But I don't know how he does it. I've had a chance to sit down and talk to him on a number of occasions, and I like you, am mesmerized by the fact that he can keep, especially when you get into the Cartel series, when there are dozens and dozens of characters, and then half of those dozens are Hispanic, so. Not speaking Spanish, I have to keep those straight, and then, you know, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things I want to say before we wrap up our time, and there's first of all is there's two things I always look for when I leave a story behind. It's how I felt walking away, and then what I learned as a writer. And I don't mean to make this whole show about gushing and compliments, but I just so thoroughly enjoyed the book. I can't help myself. Is that okay, William? Can I keep going?
That's fine, man. Thank you so much.
And so the two things that how I felt when I walked away was actually, at first I would have said it was nostalgia, but when I walked away, it was a feeling of hope. And even with all the darkness that kind of wove in through so many of the stories, it was that profound sense of hope at the end that I so much enjoyed.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, that's something I've been, working on. Because I used to just kind of want to fully embrace the darkness of, you know, stories like this. And I read Willie Vlaughton, the writer Willie Vlaughton is one of my favorite. He's a novelist and songwriter. He's one of my favorite writers, definitely my favorite contemporary novelist. And I was reading his book, his new book, The Night Always Comes, while I was working on this book. And he's the best at that. You know, he's got these sad stories, these broken characters, but there's always room for hope, and there's always kind of a little light. And you know, I wanted that, and I've been kind of on that path in the last few books, trying to find a little bit more balance there, because I think, you know, when I was first starting, I wanted to really kind of be more almost nihilistic, I've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. I mean, or at least I'm trying to find a little bit of a balance. So thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, it was odd because I hold a notebook every time I read. I hold a notebook because I always want to make little notes as to what I really enjoyed. Of course it helps with interviewing, but hope came to me. And then the second point that I was going to make was, So when I leave a story behind is what I learned as a writer. And actually, you make me want to be a better writer. And I thought to myself, how can I say that without sounding like a suck up? So I think what I came up with was, and because I'm such also an Elmer Leonard fan, is the sense that you have this staccato in a sense that's a compliment. It's not a negative. And it's you write is like a stream of consciousness. And I found myself doing, it was like listening into inner dialogue with these characters as they were going. And I love that because we talk to ourselves in our head is like, well, that was crazy. I don't know what he thought of that. You know, it's just everything is, he's an idiot. Look at the way he's looking at me. You know, what is that all about? And it's one of my favorite things about these characters. Anyway,
thanks. Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, I love trying to find that balance. And you know, I kind of came up with a lot of writers. I was always reading crime fiction. I always loved crime fiction, but there's a lot of kind of literary fiction I love too that was, you know, rooted in stream of consciousness and just kind of wandering off in a character's, you know, mind. And so, you know, I kind of can't shake that influence in a lot of ways. And I love doing that, you know, kind of falling into a character's memories, especially, or having a character tell a story, kind of what a story within the story. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. That really means a lot to me.
Sure. And I cannot finish this interview without saying this, and I wanted to read it, and I would read it except for the fact that it's too long of a section. But it's, folks, I just want to tell you this: from page 266 to 268 is one of the funniest scenes I may have ever read. I was laughing so hard I was choking and crying simultaneously, and I'm not being melodramatic. I was laughing out loud. This one character that joins the story late, it is so freaking hilarious. I'm going to give you five words. worth the price of admission. I mean, if you don't do anything else, you're going to want to buy the book to read that one. The whole book is, I'm going to go ahead and I'll say it. It's now one of my favorite books. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it, but God bless America. That one scene, William, you had me. Oh, please tell me this. I'm going to let you set it up because you know what I'm talking about and then explain it to it without giving it away. But it is butt-gusting hilarious.
I'm guessing, I don't have the book in front of me, and I don't know the page numbers off the top of my head, but I'm guessing it's the scene with Mairead talking about her family in Ireland. Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that I love about writing. You know, I didn't ever really even plan on that character. You know, not early on anyway. That character just kind of, she showed up. She showed up in the book, and she just started talking, and I loved her, and I didn't want her to stop talking, and she was a great storyteller. And I, you know, my last name is Boyle, but I'm not Irish. I'm Scottish on my dad's side, and I grew up with the Italian side of my family in Brooklyn. I didn't grow up with my dad's family at all, but I married into a big Irish family, and I just kind of took a lot of that, you know, the kind of great storytelling that exists in that family, the kind of wild, funny, dark sense of humor, and I put it into that character. And so, yeah, I mean, she just, I don't really know how to summarize it, but she tells a story, something that happened back home in Ireland. It's kind of, I don't know, it brought this other element to the book that I, again, hadn't really expected, and really kind of a new way in that last section.
Yeah, we're having a really, really bad connection here, and I'm, it's chopping up so bad, and it breaks my heart because this would be one of those things that I hardly ever ask any author to do it. I'm not going to ask you now, but if we had a better connection, I would send you a check in the mail just to have you read this, these 2.5 pages. Cause I don't remember, William, the last time I laughed that hard.
Thanks, man. There's no delay. I don't know why there's such a bad delay on going out. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. But it's pretty horrific on this end. So I'm going to spend a couple hours, have to repair that. So I'm just going to, wrap it up by saying, you have a new fan, and I enjoyed this book so deeply that I now have to go back and pick up some of your other books. If it has any kind of the same feel, and I have to believe that it does, I'm going to have so much fun. The books again, let's see, The Lonely Witness, Gravesend, A Friend is a Gift You Give Yourself, and City of Margins. And I'm so excited to say that Shoot the Moonlight comes out tomorrow. So folks, do yourself a favor, wherever you buy your books, independent or otherwise, pick up a copy of this book. Are you still there?
Well, you mean,
I just heard a noise.
Hey, can you not hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you right now.
All right, thanks.
All right, I lost you again. Because this connection is so bad, I'm going to ring off by saying,
oh, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Videos.
There you are.
Sorry about that. I don't know what's going on with this thing. Can you hear me?
Oh yeah, I can hear you and see you now.
Weird. I don't know what that was all about.
Oh God. It was horrible. I'm over here sweating bullets. I'm like, oh my God, I need air conditioning under my pits.
I'm sorry. Was it the whole time that last answer? I can redo that if you want me to. I can stop the video. Yeah. How's that?
Yeah, that's great. I'm not seeing you, but that's okay. I'll take the consistent audio. If you like crime fiction and you love character-driven stories, you'll probably rip through this about as quickly as I did. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this so that I can I'm able to wire the phone into my board, so I'll just record a sign off. That way, I can at least make a closed loop on it.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know. My Wi-Fi I think just went out, which is not usually an issue I have, but it's happened a couple of times in the last 2 or 3 days. So I think there must be some larger issue going on.
I just really appreciate your time, and I wish you profound success on this book. And as I was saying earlier, folks, I really think you should pick up a copy of Shoot the Moonlight Out by William Boyle. And again, thank you for the gift of your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, David. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the good words about the book and everything. And I'm sorry again about the shoddiness of my connection. I hope it doesn't mess things up too bad.
I'll make it work. It's going to work great on the podcast side and fairly well on the YouTube side, but we'll make it happen. I thank you again for your time.
Yeah, thanks, David. Take care.
You too, buddy.
Bye.
And there you have it.
As you saw and heard, the tech issues were a little frustrating, which was a shame because I was so looking forward to spending quality time with Bill. And I did spend some great time with him. We learned a lot, and we heard a lot about his book, Shoot the Moonlight Out. But you know, sometimes you just have to roll with it. And luckily, Bill has promised me he's going to return to the Thriller Zone again with much better Wi-Fi. Now, let's talk about this Friday show, part of our 2 guests per week in the month of November. This Friday, William, you can call me Kent Krueger, will appear to talk about his latest book, Lightning Strike. Yet another thriller I think you're going to like. I hope you'll listen. I'm David Temple, and I'll see you next time in the Thriller Zone.
The Thriller Zone has been presented by Blackstone Publishing and the exciting new techno thriller 4 Minutes, now available from your favorite bookseller. Learn more at blackstonepublishing.com.